I was meant to be talking about compassion fatigue, but I've already presented about this topic a few years ago and I couldn't really find a new perspective. But I was trying to think about the last time that I was that I underwent compassion fatigue. And it was actually about July of last year. I'd just come back to work after being away for 6 weeks. I was on call. And you'd think that being away for 6 weeks, you would be refreshed and ready to face the demands of working in a challenging environment and that my compassion tank would be at its fullest. But I hadn't actually just been on holidays for 6 weeks. I'd actually spent 3 of those weeks in Niger working at a mission hospital called Galmi Hospital. And I'm going to tell you how I ended up there shortly. But let me just tell you a bit about this incident that happened while I was on call. I had a very experienced but unaccredited registrar working with me in the hospital, and I was at home, and she rang me to discuss a patient who wanted to discharge herself against medical advice as she was unhappy with the fact that she was in a shared room. She was a gynecology patient and she actually had to share the room with a woman who just had a baby, so she was very unhappy about that. She'd only had some minor surgery, but she had a catheter and that needed to stay in for a couple of days. And so that meant that she needed to stay in hospital for a few days. And thankfully, I was at home and not in front of the patient, because I think for at that point in time, I had absolutely no compassion for her. And these were the things that actually went through my head and I actually verbalized to my registrar as well. She had a clean bed with sheets to sleep on. She only had to share her room with one other adult and a baby. She had 5 meals provided for her for free. She had nursing staff to care for her while in hospital, and she didn't need to bring a relative with her to look after her. Her operation had been performed in a timely manner by a highly qualified surgeon, and she didn't have any out-of-pocket costs, and the cost of her travel from a remote community had also been paid for. And I just couldn't understand how she could demand that she be provided with a single room. And I think the registrar was somewhat bemused and surprised at my intense reaction. And so she very kindly just said, okay, fine, I'll sort it out. So she offered to find her a bed on another ward and the patient did stay in hospital. When I put the phone down, I realised that my response was most likely out of proportion and that I was probably suffering from reverse culture shock, something that I hadn't really thought about too much. And I needed to put into practice strategies to deal with this if I was going to become an effective clinician again back in my home environment. So given that we've already had a few little talks about mission work, I thought I'd share about my mission journey, how I ended up at Galmi, and some of the decision-making processes that I went through, and you may find some of these tips useful. So as has been mentioned before, I'm an obstetrician and gynaecologist based at Royal Darwin Hospital. I've completed most of my training in Sydney and spent my last year of training in Edinburgh in Scotland. And I'm telling you some of these things just so that you, I guess, get an idea about the journey that God's taken me on to get to the point where I went to Niger last year. My family immigrated to Australia when I was 12 from Romania, and I've lived in 4 countries and travelled to well over 30 countries, and I speak several languages. My great-grandfather was the first person in his village about 90 years ago to accept the gospel and then gave a plot of land away on which he went on to build the first Adventist church in his village. And growing up in a Christian home, I saw many examples of service, and combined that with my positive experience of being welcomed into my adopted country, I was always envisaging that through my career I'd be serving in an area of need. And given that I have cross-cultural experiences and I love travelling, I presume that I would be taking mission work overseas in some capacity at some point. So my first taste of overseas mission work was a trip to Vanuatu with my school in year 11. I can't actually remember why we were going, but what we actually ended up doing was hiking through several villages over a week. We spent some time snorkeling and worshipping with the local church on the weekend. So I don't feel like I actually was very useful, but what it did do for me was it opened my eyes to the conditions in which a large proportion of the world lives, and it made me realise, again, how privileged I was. And it also strengthened my resolve that out of the abundance of the blessings that I'd received, I was compelled to help those less fortunate. My next encounter with mission work was during medical school, when I read about and met Dr. Catherine Hamlin, the famous Australian fistula surgeon who, together with her husband Reg, established the Addis Ababa Fistula Hospital in Ethiopia. And this encouraged me to pursue my dream of becoming an obstetrician and gave me rather grandiose ideas about changing the world, or at least that of women less fortunate than myself. And then as a final year medical student, I spent 5 weeks at Kajabi Hospital in Kenya, where I had a great time socialising with other medical students. I did quite a lot of sightseeing, but horrifyingly was also left in charge of the medical ward several nights a week with remote supervision by the physicians who were at home. And I say horrifyingly because I think I only realise now the extent of responsibility that was placed on me. And I do question the ethics of that, because we would never allow that to happen in Australia. And it's something that actually still happens in mission hospitals. And is it something that's appropriate? Yes, you may be the most junior person. Maybe you do have more knowledge than the local nurses, but often you don't. But this did have this little mission trip did sort of have a positive effect, and I still wanted to serve overseas in some capacity. The reality of daily life as a junior doctor then hit, and it was followed by the pressures of applying for a training program, that petrifying first year as a registrar, and they all took their toll on me, and the idea of serving overseas, while still strong in my mind, took a back seat. However, at that time I decided to start a Masters of International Public Health to better prepare myself. And while I learnt a lot during this time, it also left me rather discouraged and with a lot more questions than it actually answered. And these are some of the questions that I had, and I don't know that I actually particularly have answers for them, but I'm sure some of you will be having the same sort of questions. What and where is the best way to serve? How do I serve in an ethical and an effectively useful way? How long do I go for? For me, it was a matter of how much time could I take out of my training? How do I choose what organisation to serve with? When's the best time to go in terms of what time I could take off, but also in terms of the skills that I could offer and in terms of the impact that would have on my training and other commitments? So at that time I was in a training program in a hospital which didn't have a strong record for medical missions or where this was particularly encouraged. So these questions sort of continued to simmer at the back of my mind with no clear answer. Towards the end of my training, I went on two short trips to Nepal with a small team of gynecologists, anaesthetists and nursing staff to perform pelvic floor surgery for 2 weeks. For women who otherwise couldn't have afforded this life-changing procedure. We took along all our equipment, performed surgery, did a little bit of teaching on the way, had a great time as a team, did some sightseeing and then returned to our respective lives in Australia. And while I acknowledge that we certainly improved the quality of life of many women, this kind of short-term volunteering left me feeling uneasy again. How useful was this project? Were we actually bringing new skills to the country? There were many trained gynaecologists who could perform the procedures we were undertaking, but they were overwhelmed by the need for obstetric service. And the women needed to pay considerable sums of money, so that made it out of reach for most of them. Were we reaching the women who were most in need? And could war women have had surgery instead of sending such a large team from Australia if we just donated the money we spent on travel and they could have had local surgeons perform this? Another question I had was it ethical for me to perform these surgeries as a trainee, even with close supervision on unsuspecting patients who didn't know I was a trainee? And then I had no way of following them up in the short or the long term. And what were we doing about actually preventing the causes of pelvic organ prolapse and the longer-term health of these patients? I felt that I'd probably gained more from these trips than I had contributed, and after two trips with these unresolved questions, I decided that this was not a good fit for me. And I continued to pray and keep an open mind for other opportunities. And then I unexpectedly moved to Darwin. And when I say unexpectedly, it was unexpected for me because as far as God was concerned, he'd prepared this move for me. However, I was oblivious to the ways that he was leading. And for the first time, I found myself working in a department which was open to my pursuing volunteer work. And I worked with other consultants who'd spent considerable parts of their careers working overseas, either independently or with Christian organisations or other NGOs. And so I was able to ask them lots of questions and was able to use them as resources when I eventually did work overseas. So how did I end up in Galmi? Over the previous 6 to 7 years, I kept in touch with a friend who's a GP obstetrician, and she ended up working as a missionary doctor in Niger in West Africa. She's been there for 5 years now. We'd met up in various places around the world, and she kept asking me to go and work with her, and I kept promising that I would go when the right time came. And that right time came when I actually went to Darwin. Work agreed to give me leave without pay, which would have been unheard of in Sydney, and a few other opportunities lined up, and that's how I ended up spending 3 weeks in the middle of last year working at Galmi Hospital, which is run by Serving in Mission in Niger in West Africa. Just a little bit about this was one of the verses that I come back to a lot, and I think my mission sort of journey illustrates this, that God knows the plans that he has for our lives, and they're plans that are good for us and good for those around us as well. So Niger is a landlocked country in West Africa, not to be confused with Nigeria. It's a Muslim country formerly colonised by the French. It's got a population roughly the same size of Australia. However, when you look at their statistics, particularly in obstetrics, their maternal mortality ratio is 650 per 100,000 maternity. So if 100,000 women give birth, 650 of those will die. And you compare that with Australia's MMR, which is 6.8. Only 29% of women have a skilled birth attendant at delivery, and they have a female literacy rate of 35%. And this is what greeted me as I was landing in Niger. It looks very different to what Australia looks like. And I still find it hard to articulate the experiences that I had at Galmi. There was a lot of heartbreak, but there was a lot of resilience and joy, both in the staff and the patients there. I saw many heartbreaking cases and many cases which were difficult to treat only in the context of Niger. Babies and women who would have easily survived and thrived had they lived in Australia. And most of the diseases and poor outcomes I saw were mainly due to the difficult living conditions. Almost every woman I saw had lost at least one baby either during childbirth or immediately after, mostly due to lack of adequate care. And this patient had a profound impact on me, and I still feel that I was probably the one that was more blessed by looking after her. She had had three term stillbirths or intrapartum deaths. So this was her fourth pregnancy, and she had lost three babies. We don't know exactly why. So she came to our clinic on a Friday afternoon. She had antenatal care with us, was just a few days after her due date. And for the obstetricians in the room, her Leica volume was reduced, and we were talking about whether we should induce her or not, and in the end made the decision to deliver her via cesarean section. So this woman's had four pregnancies, and this was her first baby that actually survived. I think she was just as stunned as I was. So how did I prepare myself for going to Niger, and what were some of the difficulties I encountered there? It felt like absolutely everything was new. New language, new culture, new clinical context. And to a certain degree, I felt like I'd landed on the moon, but was expected to function normally. So these were some of the difficulties I expected. And I guess in a way they go counter to where I have envisaged that I would be working, and things that would make it easier and make my ministry more have a greater impact. Niger is a long way from Australia, and it's difficult to get to. It took me about 6 months to fill out all the forms I needed to be allowed to work in Niger, to find an NGO to go with, and to obtain medical as well as character referees. I had to travel to Paris to obtain my visa, as there's no embassy or consulate of Niger in Australia, and I didn't fancy parting with my passport for several weeks while it made the journey to the Nigerian embassy in the States and then back to Darwin. French is the official language in Niger, and while I do speak a little bit of French, it still made communication with the staff difficult. During the day I did have an interpreter, and at night I was basically left to my own devices, and it would be something to the extent of I'd get a phone call to say, "Doctor, come," and I would say, "Coming," or "we arrive." And you know that if you've been on call, those 5 minutes that it takes you to reach the hospital, or 10 minutes to get to the hospital, and someone tells you what the problem is the time that you work out in your head what you should be doing for your patient. I didn't have that privilege. Niger is a Muslim country and it's very conservative, so I was expected to wear ankle-length skirts or dresses and a head covering while I was in the hospital. And while I respected these cultural norms, I did find it difficult to accept that I needed to behave and dress in a certain way in order to be accepted, while my male colleagues who went there were not inconvenienced by such cultural norms. Plus, doing an instrumental delivery while your open skirt, you're trying to keep your skirt from opening up and become more revealing than scrub pants, wasn't the easiest. The scope of clinical practice is very different, even to what I encountered in Darwin. And I'd never seen a ruptured uterus, and only knew how to recognise the signs of impending rupture in theory. So I recognised that the local midwives in a lot of cases had more appropriate clinical skills, and I needed to be guided by them. I was there only for a short time, so while I observed practices which maybe could have been improved, I was careful about the suggestions I made as I didn't understand the full context. And limited internet and therefore contact with my support network outside Galmi made this difficult. However, it was an advantage because it actually led me to spend more time in prayer and relying on God rather than the advice of just friends and colleagues. So despite all these difficulties, why did I choose to go to Galmi? My friend who works there described an incredible need which I could help alleviate with my skills. Selfishly, because my friend was there and I had heard a lot about Galmi, it felt somewhat familiar and I knew I would have a friendly supportive face to help guide me through my time there. And I also wanted to offer her the support that she needed. I knew that while serving with an organisation like MSF is a trendy thing to do, I felt that while long-term missions is not something that I've been called to, providing relief to a long-term missionary is more sustainable and helps keep them in the field longer and thus actually building health system capacity rather than just providing short-term assistance. So what have I learnt and what are some of the things I would ask you to think about if you're considering cross-cultural missions? And I have three questions that I'm not going to spend too much time on because I don't know how much more time I have with you. But was the questions that I asked myself was my trip effective? And I believe it was. I didn't just do, but I also shared my skill and I provided relief for my overworked friend. Was it ethical and was it culturally relevant? I did try to form relationships with locals, and because my friend had been there for a long time, I basically just went in to help relieve her and the hospital staff accepted me more readily. So on a personal level, what did this experience teach me? It taught me to pray and to trust that God would lead me to the right place at the right time, and also that he would give me the wisdom in those difficult clinical scenarios. I learnt that it's important to have networks, support networks in place, and that may take all sorts of forms. I've got two very close friends who live in different cities to me, and we chat on Instagram and we send each other messages, and they were vital when I was there. They knew I was there. It was difficult to reach me, but I knew that they were praying for me. I had my home group in Darwin praying for me, and I also had professional supports. I had a couple of consultants who had worked overseas, and I could just shoot them off a quick email or a message to ask them, what do I do in this situation? I have no idea what I'm meant to be doing. The other point that I have is the most important tip was be prepared to be overwhelmed and know what your limits are. I actually took a week's leave prior to arriving in Niger to overcome jet lag and work tiredness. And then I had 2 weeks holidays with friends in a familiar environment so I could decompress and prepare for coming back to work in Australia. Know that you will be underprepared and that you'll be challenged, but the next time you go, it will be easier. Also, find joy in the small things. It was lovely to just walk to the hospital. It was a 5-minute walk, if not shorter. So I didn't have to wake up really early in the morning, and it was beautiful to walk through the hospital grounds and say hello to all the other staff as well. And as you come back, I would say take time to reflect on your experiences when you return home and do find someone who you can debrief with. So I guess in sharing my story, I'd like to encourage you that if you are interested in overseas mission work, it's definitely worth pursuing. But the route you take may be circuitous, and we need to be wise in choosing how and where we serve in order to be truly of benefit to those we serve. I just want to leave you with two verses. The first one's from Philippians 2. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. And the other verse that brought me a lot of comfort while I was away was from Deuteronomy 31, verse 8. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.